We're here.
I wish I could give this feeling. I wish I could give this feeling.
What up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Corner Podcast. We're back again. I'm Kel Dansby.
Yep, and it's Andreas Hale.
And he's kind of feeling sick.
Yeah, man.
And I'm tired as hell because I just finished being sick. So we're going to make sure we wrap this up kind of quick today, but we're going to pack it with all the combat sports you're used to. We're also going to talk a little bit of hip-hop and throw in whatever else we feel like. You know, last night we saw Kobe retire. We might have to touch on that.
Yeah, man.
It was a crazy game.
Unbelievable.
But to give you a quick rundown of what we're talking about, this week we're going to review the Pacquiao-Bradley fight, talk about Pacquiao's options moving forward, if he's really going to retire or not. We're going to talk about UFC. They just announced that they're having the New York City card. We're going to talk a little bit about that and the upcoming UFC 197 pay-per-view. And then we're going to touch on WWE and New Japan. A lot to talk about there. Another key injury, so that hurts the WWE. But like I said, let's start off on some random stuff. Andreas, even though he's sick now, he wasn't sick a couple days ago when he was chilling on the set of the Tupac movie.
Yes, I was at the All Eyes on Me filming. It's kind of secret. They were filming the scene where Tupac got shot. And a friend of mine, I got invited. Apparently, I'm the only writer that's been on set for the entire film. And they were filming for the last 2 days, wrapping up shoot filming with Benny Boom directing, Demetrius Shipp Jr., who looks, goddamn, if there's anybody that looked like Tupac, this kid, oh my God.
Spot on.
Scary, scary, scary. So originally, you know, I was told, you know, there wouldn't be any interviews. I would just be invited to the set. So I planned to be there from like 9 to like 10:30. Councilman Weekly out here in Vegas, they were, you know, doing this proclamation thing where they were giving an award to them, honoring Tupac's memory and filming out here in Vegas on the Strip. But it ended up turning into, hey, you want to stay and interview the cast and watch the film? And so I ended up being there till 4 in the morning. And
they give you a sneak preview of the film?
Nah, not yet.
That's crazy.
Yeah, LT
Director's cut.
Yeah, LT Hutton, who was there, is one of the producers. Edie Amin from the Outlaws. He's actually in the movie, and he's one of the producers. He's a consultant actually. And so we got a chance to talk. I got a chance to see them film the infamous death scene, which is creepy because I grew up in Vegas, and I happened to be like two blocks away when Pac got shot. I was at the MGM when the scuffle happened. You know, me and a bunch of my friends, we were a bunch of teenagers trying to get into some trouble. And we had no idea the Pac got shot. It was, you know, this is before social media popped off. Hell, it was before cell phones were really a thing. And so it was creepy to see it. You know, it's to a T. The scene, you know, that infamous picture of Suge Knight in the Coogee sweater with Pac with the green jersey where he's looking out the window.
Yeah.
They recreate that. And my God, it looks so... It's so spot on. But talking to Benny Boom, talking to Edie Amin, talking to LT, talking to Demetrius Shipp's father, who actually, Demetrius Shipp Jr., the kid who plays Pac, actually grew up around Pac as a kid. As a baby, he used to be in the studio. Demetrius Shipp Sr. actually produced Toss It Up. So it's like this crazy intertwining of these people. And then Top Dog hits me and was like, yo, that's my nephew. So Demetrius Shipp Jr. is Top Dog's nephew. Like, the world is really crazy how tight this is. But, man, it was just a wild night. Now it's gone from, you know, just me being on set to me pitching the story to some huge outlets. Because being the only writer that's been on set and having the context that I have. And talking to Demetrius, it was crazy to watch his mannerisms are just like Pac now. Like, he's adopted every little piece of Tupac that you can have. So I can't wait for this movie to drop. There's no street date yet. There's no release date. They're still filming. Like I said, they just wrapped up filming, so they're supposed to go into editing. But, dude, I'm excited to see it. When my story comes out, I'm excited for a lot of y'all to read it because there's just so much in there about Pac's life and, you know, the cast and Benny Boom. And it's like, it's not like they got like minor league people doing this movie. It's Oscar-nominated, Oscar-award-winning directors of photography, cinematographers. So it's not just a rap video producer making a Tupac movie. This is like some major level production, but it's dope. And then I came back and I got sick. It was crazy.
Nah, it sounds bananas. You know, just seeing all the work that goes into it, it's not going to be like, you know, the TLC movie on like VH1 or something. Like, nah. It's legit. And we see, you know, it has something that can be kind of have the same impact as Straight Outta Compton. When we saw that and was like, yo, it's so close because they have firsthand knowledge and people who are around the entire time. So it's dope that they, you know, really reached out and got the people needed to make a great movie.
You know, what kind of makes this one even more interesting, though, is because Pac has passed. And even with the NWA movie, because you just had Ice Cube and Dre handling, like, the consulting for that film. So it was kind of skewed towards one side, whether you liked it or not. You know, you knew, you know, they didn't talk much about the D-Barnes incident, nothing like that. In this movie, however, everything, from what I understand, is getting talked about. You know, talking to Idi Amin, which is crazy watching him, because Idi Amin was in the car behind Pac when Pac got shot. So when they're filming that scene, I'm watching Idi have to recreate this, like 20 years has passed, and you're reliving the night that Pac got shot. But he was like, you know, we want to be really true to who Pac was, the controversies and the good things. So everything from, it seems like, the rape, you know, him shooting the cops in Atlanta, in the ass, like everything, you're going to get all of that here. So I feel like it's going to be even more authentic. And with Demetrius looking just like Pac, you know, we might get a better movie than Straight Outta Compton. I have to wait and see it, but man, just it's crazy.
Nah, it's dope. Started your week off on a good note. But before then, we even had, you know, some boxing that we went to and Pacquiao fight, and we got to talk about that. But last night, sick or not, I know you watched Kobe drop 60.
Man, broke Twitter. What happened? Like, Twitter was messed up all night because these two on the court, it felt like.
Yo, Kobe broke Twitter. He did what Kim Kardashian nudes couldn't do.
Man. Oh, my God.
And that's what it took. And, you know, shout out to Steph and the Warriors making history. Steph was on fire to start that game. But, you know, by the second half, no one cared. The game was wrapped up. Steph was just shooting to shoot. He had gotten the record for 400 three-pointers in a season, which is crazy. And people were just there to see Kobe. And Kobe put on a show in, what, the last 5 minutes of that game?
Yeah, I mean, what did we do? Score 15? Was it 15 points in the last 3 minutes?
15 points last 3 minutes on... Well, he was perfect shooting-wise. So God. I think he might have been 4 for 4. Had to be 16 points then, because he hit all 4 of his free throws as well.
Hey, I mean, yo. Okay, so it's funny because you watched the game. Like, I had my split screen going. And I had the Warriors on the big screen first because I was like, I need to see how this game starts, because if the Warriors run out, it's going to be a wrap. But then as soon as that game got out of hand, it was like Kobe was like, all right, now everybody's watching me. Because he had a terrible first 5 minutes of that game. I was like, damn, he's going to score like 15 points in his last game.
0 for 5.
Yeah, then he just went nuts. And I'm like, yo, son, he shot 50 shots, man. 50 shots.
Like, yo, he can't feel his arms today. No arms, no legs. And they weren't easy shots. Contested all night, getting fouled in the lane.
Yo, Kobe last night. Kobe did Kobe.
That was it, yo. It was the last hurrah. Sadly, it's the last hurrah. It would have been dope to see him, you know, play in the Olympics or just even be on the team. Like, if you're not going to play, whatever, just be on the team. Give the guy a spot.
I don't even want to say, like, I think, like, this was...
But this is the walk-off, so I understand. Yeah.
This is the finest retirement moment I think I know that I've ever seen. Like, if MJ retired making that shot up with Byron Scott in the NBA Finals, that would have been it. But then MJ came back and tarnished his legacy with the Wizards. So what Kobe did last night, forget about it. I've just never seen anything like that. And then it's like, and he doesn't have to come back. Why?
Well, he took 50 shots. I mean, still, you know, I mean, you give MJ 50 shots his last game, he's putting up 70, 80.
But he didn't. Like, see, the thing...
No, he didn't wild out and go nut the entire game. Like,
the thing about
just rode off into the sunset.
The thing about this that makes it different is that everybody knew Kobe was retiring. Now, if Kobe was to come back, it ruins everything. But when Kobe said at the beginning of the season, this is it, so it became the Kobe tour. So this last game, everybody was paying attention. So Kobe knew he had to put it all on the line in the last game.
And Utah Jazz knew he had to put it all on the line, and they let him. Well, for much of that game... Until I say, like, the final five, where he really earned it, like, the second half of that fourth quarter, he earned it. Before then, they were giving him bunnies. Like, yeah, man, just shoot, do your thing, it's your last game. They were eliminated, they found out at halftime, they were like, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it's just regardless, like, 60 points from Kobe, who's, you know, been shooting terrible from the field. It's not like he shot great in this game, but he came in clutch, Kobe, like he did. And then he ends it by dropping an assist. Like, he passed the torch at the end of the game.
Full court length. Yeah, man. It was one hell of a way to go out. It's reminds me a lot like of when Jeter went out and he just got tossed like the easiest pitch ever so he could hit his home run in Yankee Stadium and call it a career. Kobe got tossed that, but then when it came down to it and he had to win the game, the Jazz weren't trying to let him win. They didn't care how much they let him score. They were trying to win the game, and Kobe willed the Lakers to win. Those last like two or three shots were just incredible.
Yeah. Especially, I mean, that last one before he started shooting the free throws, you know, he, at top of the key, shoots over to the right, shoots the pretty J, knocks it down. I'm like, yo, forget about it.
I'm waiting for him to hit the Jordan shrug.
Right. Like, this is my life. Like, it's a wrap. This is the best way to go out. Now, let's talk about another guy who's going out.
Manny Pacquiao, supposedly going out after this Timothy Bradley fight. We were both there. I mean, I guess the people showed. There was a great atmosphere when their fight came on. So more people were there than I thought would be there. It was a louder crowd than I thought. They were just late showing. So Pacquiao still brings him out.
Kind of. I mean, it still felt subdued up until the point where Manny was in the ring. Like, the diehard Manny fans were there, but the casual fan didn't give a shit about this fight. And I could see why. You know, it's everything that's been going on, it was nobody cared. But all in all, Pacquiao had a good showing. He looked good. It seemed like a little bit of that killer instinct came back when he dropped Bradley, made him tuck and roll grandma on the late in the fight. You know, Bradley just had nothing for him. And as good as Teliatos was, I mean, it really is a testament that Manny still has it. He can still go.
Well, I thought Bradley did okay until that first, like, phantom knockdown. Hey, I don't know if it was a real knockdown or not. I still watched it over and over. He gets grazed by the left, but it does look like Manny pulls his gloves down. And once your gloves touch, you know, it's a knockdown, so it is what it is. He just seemed off balance, and Manny pulled him to the ground. So I think that messed up his psyche more than anything, because I had it 3-3.
Well, yeah, it was close early. It was close.
And then, you know, he gets that knockdown and, you know, the old Bradley habits come in.
Yeah, and I mean, Pacquiao turned it up too. Like, the offensive output turned up, even though these two didn't throw a lot of punches for the entire fight. But it felt like Pacquiao was trying to figure himself out for the first three rounds. Yeah. And then once he got it together, he just kind of steamrolled the rest of the fight. He just took over and there was nothing that Bradley could do to stop him.
No, that last knockdown, like you said, was crazy. Still can't get the knockout. Pacquiao, no knockout since 2009. So we're seeing a different fighter. But skill-wise, he still has it when he can open up. I don't know if he has the gas to do it, you know, the entire fight anymore. The days of seeing Pacquiao throw, 70 punches or something in a round are way gone.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it depends on the opponent. He's 37, man. You know, when you get 37, you've been fighting since, you know, for 21 years. It's time to really consider your career and consider your opponents. But with that being said, I just don't buy that Manny's retiring.
He ain't walking away.
And I feel like everything at the post-fight press conference and everything leading up to it, where his, you know, he keeps putting the onus on his family. My wife, my mother want me to retire. I'm going to be a senator. Like, never has Manny Pacquiao said, like Floyd Mayweather, like, I'm tired of this shit and I feel like retiring. He still wants to fight. And when he's moping around the house and Jinky's looking at Manny like, what are you doing, Manny? He's like, I'm unhappy, Jinky. I want to fight. She's going to have to let him fight again. He's going to fight again.
Yeah, being a senator can't be that fun.
Nah. And plus, you know, the money you make fighting, you know, he's making $20 million for this fight plus pay-per-view. Like, whatever the next fight is, if it were to be against Terrence Crawford, which I think Terrence Crawford beats him, but whatever he does, that's more money than he's going to ever make being a senator. He could build more houses and hospitals or whatever he wants to do in the Philippines. I just don't see why retire. If you have the desire to fight and you want to make more money, you might as well fight, because he's not out yet. Me personally, if none of these circumstances surrounding Manny Pacquiao existed, I kind of want him just to retire. I don't necessarily need to see him fight again, but I think I can't see him walking away from the sport.
I think there's going to be another big payday out there for him. That's what keeps him there, I think. You know, whether or not he still wants to fight, I don't know. Being a senator seems like it's his goals and ambition, and then he wants to help people. But being a senator and passing laws for a country that isn't a wealthy one isn't going to do much. So I'm not sure if he expects, you know, state funding from the Philippines to kind of carry his efforts in building houses and taking care of the poor and all that stuff. It's just not going to happen. So he had to come out of pocket before. And if he tries to do so again, he's going to notice he's running out of money quick. So another big fight helps him come out of pocket, whether he's a senator or not. The big fight that everyone's going to turn their eyes to, like as soon as the rumblings pick up, is Floyd versus Manny too. And they have the built-in excuse off of the shoulder injury. You have him, you know, fighting a guy like Timothy Bradley, who looked great in his fight before this and looked good for, you know, the first six rounds. And Manny turning it up and showing a glimpse of that old Manny. And then, of course, you have Skip Bayless and all those guys drumming it up. Fight Night already saying, you know, this Pacquiao would beat Mayweather. See what a healthy Pacquiao can do. Just that narrative and the press just twisting the minds of the majority, and it could sell again. So Manny's not turning down another 100 mil.
I don't want to see that fight happen again.
It's going to be the exact same thing.
Yeah, like the shoulder excuse, like whatever you want to say. There's a lot that goes into it. You know, first Floyd has to come out of retirement, and then Manny's got to come out of retirement. And then they have to negotiate money and all these other things they have to do in order to make this fight happen. I don't want to see it. Like I said, if Manny's going to fight, I'd like to see him fight Terrence Crawford. If he doesn't fight, then I'm fine with it. Floyd.
He's not going to put Crawford over, though. Like, you're pretty much just asking him, yo, put the young guy over.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, if Bob Arum offers him enough money, because he's got to make a star. And Arum's the promoter at the end of the day. And Terrence Crawford needs a Manny Pacquiao fight to become boxing's next big thing. So, you know, it's either do or die for Terrence Crawford, because if he's fighting Victor Postol out here in Vegas on July 23rd, that's not going to be a star-making fight. You know, you need the Manny Pacquiao to put you over. So that's the fight I'd like to see happen if he's going to continue. But if not, I just don't want to see Mayweather-Pacquiao too. I have no desire to see that fight whatsoever. And I hate that people are going to start talking about this because, you know, Manny was just completely outclassed by Floyd Mayweather. And it doesn't matter how good that shoulder is. Manny would have never beaten him before. He would never would have beaten Durant. He just would never beat Floyd Mayweather. It wasn't going to happen.
And people just want the hope. And you can sell hope. If we know that. And they're just looking to sell something. Talking about, you know, a future star, Anthony Joshua fought. Earned his first belt. Olympic gold medalist. UK superstar at this point. Sold out the arena in London in 2 minutes?
Well, yeah, crazy. UK's got big boxer fans, you know, so it's like Khan, Hatton, those guys are always going to sell out their buildings.
Two minutes. That's for a kid that's 3 years into his boxing career. Granted, he was going for his first major title, and he put on a show.
Well, yeah, I mean, we don't know much about Charles Martin. Charles Martin just got beat up.
I don't know how he had that belt, by the way.
Yeah, that's the thing. But Joshua looked good, man. You know, I mean, the kid looks good. He has a look to him. He's super muscular. He looks like
Cam Newton.
Yeah, it's crazy. He looks like a super huge Cam Newton. But, you know, he's got the country's backing because he's, you know, super heavyweight in the Olympics. So the country's always going to be behind him. But, he's definitely a star in the making. I don't know if he'll ever have true crossover appeal. It'll be interesting to see. He's going to have to fight some stiffer competition and knock out a lot more people. But he's definitely on his way. The kid has star qualities to him. But, it's Charles Martin. I mean, second round knockout. I don't know who Charles Martin is.
I don't either. I mean, Anthony Joshua, his look, the way he put together his combos, that right hand slipped it in so easy and effortlessly. I think he gives a lot of people in the heavyweight division right now a problem, especially after watching that last Klitschko fight versus Fury. They were moving in slow motion compared to what I saw.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, Klitschko and Fury, completely different styles. You know, Fury-Klitschko rematch has been booked, but, you know, a Fury-Joshua fight is really interesting because Fury's really long and rangy. As boring as that Klitschko fight is, you know, his style just gives you problems. But it'll be interesting, man. The heavyweight division is interesting again. Of course, you got Deontay Wilder fighting Alexander Povetkin. So there's some
things. Russia for some reason.
Well, yeah, it could have been the States, but, you know. It's going to draw in Russia. It'll be a big fight in Russia, and Wilder should come out with a victory. He's still very green. There's a lot of polish that needs to happen with Deontay Wilder. But
they got to rush him, though, right? He's 30.
It's time. It's time. The heavyweight division is just super thin. There's really nowhere to go. So, you know, Wilder beats Povetkin. Either he's waiting for a Fury or a Klitschko or, you know, a David Haye or somebody. He's got to fight somebody. And Anthony Joshua, he's the same case. He's knocked out everybody that he's fought. There's not too many people left before you got to start putting these guys against each other.
No, yeah, definitely. And as soon as that fight happened, like I wrote an article, it's like boxing's best chance at a super fight moving forward is between a Joshua and a Wilder. Just because they're heavyweights, the power, the knockouts, that sells themselves. And then you put Wilder's mouth behind the promotion and Joshua's look, it builds one hell of a narrative.
Yeah,
and,
I mean,
people looked at me a little crazy because everyone's like, Triple G versus Canelo. I'm like, it's not a super fight on the platform of what we consider a super fight now with, Pacquiao versus Mayweather and the standards that kind of set. So two heavyweights, young, just in shape heavyweights. When's the last time we had two in shape heavyweights in the ring at the same damn time? Like the looks sell themselves.
Yeah, but I mean, I think Canelo Triple G is still a bigger fight. I mean, that's the fight everybody wants to see. There's a bill behind it. It's you have the Mexican contingency backing up Canelo.
You have the UK with Joshua.
It's not the same. The UK.
I saw stars come out for Wilder versus Stavern.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was a heavyweight fight in Vegas, but it's still not the level of what Canelo, because one, he fought Floyd. You know, he's packing out arenas. He's in the States. And Mexico is closer to the U.S. than the U.K. And Mexicans live in the U.S. and are going to back Canelo. And Triple G is the boogeyman. And there is no other fighter like Triple G out there right now. Like, people like Deontay Wilder. People like Anthony Joshua. But neither of them look as unbeatable as Triple G has looked. And when Triple G fights Wade in New York, and the other thing is the marketing. Triple G has fought in New York. Triple G has fought in L.A. And he's built fan bases on both coasts. Joshua hasn't done that in the States yet, and Wilder, while he's done it in Vegas, he's not necessarily like a star. Like, he doesn't have a Jordan brand deal like Triple G does. Triple G and Canelo, and the simple fact that these two aren't probably going to fight this year is going to become a super fight. The anticipation is going to be super high. Wilder, Joshua, you got a lot to work towards to get to make that
a lot of time fight. Yeah, a lot of time. Like, yeah. I didn't think it happened soon, but like 2018, it's probably the next best chance. And I'm not sold that Canelo ever fights Triple G.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it eventually happens. I think you're going to be forced in a position for it to happen. Oscar's just kind of fearful of putting him in there now. You got to milk the cow, the money cow, as much as you can. And, you know,
I mean, his guy already took a loss, though. Like, at this point,
it's the Floyd.
Yeah,
it's the Floyd. I mean, yeah, you're going to lose the Floyd. Everybody takes a loss to Floyd. And the thing about Mexican fighters is that you can lose a fight. Mexicans don't care. They're going to still back you. It's the American audiences that we put so much stock into a loss. If Triple G were to lose, obviously that changes everything. But nobody sees Triple G losing anytime soon at all. He's exciting. He's fun to watch. You know, Canelo's fun to watch. That's the other thing. Like, these guys are fun to watch. Wilder's, even though he gets knockouts, some of his fights, you know, for like five or six rounds have been really bad. But Triple G and Canelo, there's just no doubt that these guys will put on the show, even though I think Canelo gets killed in that fight, late stoppage. But that's the fight that everybody wants to see. That's next level boxing right there. That's a super fight, a huge fight.
Hopefully we get one of them, because boxing is going to need it sooner or later. You know, the mystique of a Pacquiao versus Floyd rematch can only last so long. It's time for someone up to jump up and, you know, take that crown. That's boxing, though. Before we move away from it, your boy AB in the news again. Arrested again.
Yeah.
Again.
Violated his probate based on a reckless driving charge from, I forgot when.
At least it's not drunk driving. I don't know how you're just recklessly driving. What the hell are you doing?
I'm just saying, like, you know, with Broner and John Jones, if these guys were on Wacky Racers, I'd tune in. Because they just need to stay far away from vehicles and life in general and social media. So Adrian Broner, you know, 10 days locked up, he'll be back out, and then he's going to have to face the music on whatever happens with this assault and burglary charge for the incidents outside the bowling alley. And, you know, Broner's just, you know, he's a knucklehead, man. I don't think he's ever going to get it together. This is who he is. So whoever he fights next, like, I hope he fought with somebody that put him up there with Crawford. Hell, I hope Broner fights Pacquiao. I just don't want somebody to beat him up.
Broner Pacquiao would be a great fight for Pacquiao.
Yeah, the good versus the evil, apparently. But Broner's just not that good, man. And the fact that he's not that good, plus all this outside the ring activity, it's ridiculous, man. I'm sick of it.
He's the perfect setup guy. That's true. It. You know, he's the jobber, and he's one hell of a heel at it. So he's the guy that sets up, you know, the next great star. And we're going to actually see one of those stars this weekend, Errol Spence. a guy who could really land that Broner fight. Damn near, he's in line. He's getting his first, I guess, major test, but with someone else who's become a jobber, Chris Algieri.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Algieri's come a long way. The guy was living in his parents' basement, got a Pacquiao fight, changed his entire life.
Great career for him, and he fought his way into the positions. He's just not elite. And his name, because of the Pacquiao fight, puts him in that category now. Yeah. Kind of like Guerrero. He wasn't elite, but he fought Floyd, so everyone just wants his name on their resume.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, Guerrero was a little bit different because Guerrero was, you know, he was killing people at lightweight before he jumped up two divisions. Guerrero had some buzz behind him. Algieri came out of virtually nowhere. You know, he beat Provodnikov. That put him on the map because Provodnikov was supposed to run over Algieri. So, you know, the Spence fight, he'll be a competitor for a few rounds. But Errol Spence, he's got the goods, man. The kid is a super talent, and it'll be fun to watch how he puts it all together against Algieri this weekend and then seeing what's next for him, because obviously he's got the backing of the people like Floyd Mayweather and the boxing community. Now he's just got to turn it over to the mainstream, because he is definitely next in line to be a big deal.
Yeah, the stuff at the top kind of is at a stalemate because of Thurman and Porter, so we don't know exactly where that fight is happening still. I mean, it has the date, but we really haven't heard much about it.
Right.
So until those two fight, everything else is kind of just up in the air for PBC and the rest of their fights going on in 2016.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's switch over to UFC then. We got to talk a little bit about that. UFC just announced that it'd be UFC 204, if you do the math, will be in Madison Square Garden in New York City. Everything's gone through. The governor signed off on it. It's a go. How do you think they set up that pay-per-view? Do you think it's going to be, you know, UFC 200 part two? Like, are they going to make it a spectacle?
I don't think it'll be that big. It's turned, like, if you look at the 200 card right now, it's stacked. Like, it's going to be interesting with who ends up on Fight Pass and who ends up on the prelims, because that card is loaded.
Definitely. Two more spots left on that card.
Right, and that's probably where the Fight Pass fights will come. But, you know, 204, I mean, if 204 is what it is at the Garden, depending on whether Weidman can, you know, beat Luke Rockhold or John Jones or where these guys at, they could put, you know, a few New Yorkers on this card. Maybe Frankie Edgar if he wins the interim title against Jose Aldo. I mean, there's some scenarios. I think it'll be a big card, but it won't be any bigger than what they're doing for 200. But I think they'll load it up with a lot of New York talent. I think Aljamain Sterling will end up on that card.
You have him. Like you said, if Weidman is the champion, Weidman's automatically going to be on the card, they said.
Yeah.
So that's another championship fight. John Jones, DC, you don't know when that's getting rescheduled for. If they want the long layover to let DC get healthy, that's a possibility. Ronda Rousey has been talking about a November return. That peg her for this fight.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways you could go with it, man. It's going to be a big deal because, you know, New York has been living like cavemen and finally allowing MMA to be legalized sport is so, you know, the people are going to come out in droves to see whoever fights on this card. So it'll be big regardless.
We got
to
be out there for this. I'm calling it already. So don't book nothing for November 12th. We're not going to see. We're going to be there. We're going to make it happen. All our loudspeakers family is out there. We got to go. We got to do our little, like, media rounds. Got to be on, like, Taxes joint. We got to be on Combat Jack show. We got to do all that. Hyping up the fight, hyping up us, and then go that weekend.
All right. Well, shit. That sounds like a good idea.
All right. We're doing it. Let's review one fight. I think only one fight mattered from last weekend. JDS. We saw his return.
Yeah, man. He looked
Rothwell.
Good.
He looked great.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, Rothwell is a – he couldn't get his hands on him. And that's been the strength of Rothwell these past few fights, is once he gets his hand on you, his submission game has been so underrated. But JDS was light on his feet. You know, it looked like he was fighting the Mountain from Game of Thrones, because Rothwell was just a big, hairy dude awkwardly chasing him around for five rounds. But Junior looked great. I'm curious what they do with him next.
Yeah, like, because the heavyweight division is just a mess right now.
Yeah, it's all over the place.
As soon as someone gets close, and you'd be like, okay, they're the next contender, they just got to win this one fight, they lose.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm here for a Overeem JDS rematch, if that's what we need to see, because you know, I'd never fathomed that Overeem would have knocked out Junior. So, you know, maybe these guys will eventually be on a crash course to fight each other again.
Where does that leave Kane?
Well, I mean, Kane's got, you know, he's got a fight at 200, so we'll see how good he looks in his fight. I don't know. The heavyweight division is just in shambles right now. And as soon as John says, you know what, I'm here, then it gets really interesting. Oh, so
then he's coming for that belt.
Yeah, so it's, you know, I don't know if Stipe's, if I'm, Fabricio Verdun's going to beat Stipe. I really like Stipe Miocic. So it's, this whole division's a mess. And it could lead to, you know, even if Verdun wins, maybe he has to fight Overeem again, who Overeem beat him at the Strikeforce, for the Strikeforce heavyweight title. But this was before Fabricio had great, much better hands. So there's a number of ways this thing can go in this heavyweight division. But JDS, you know, return to form is still impressive. You got Derek Lewis too. Yeah, that's the other guy.
With a great knockout. You know,
scary power. Scary power.
He wants Roy Nelson. That's a great matchup.
Give it to him.
Yeah. You know, you got Roy Nelson. What's his face? Just read up for a new contract.
And Mark Hunt.
Mark Hunt. So those are two great matchups for, you know, Derek Lewis maybe in the future. Stylistically, those match up. So you have these guys that are working with their way around. There's just no youth.
No. But, I mean, you know, for me right now, I'm looking at Derek Lewis because his power, his ground and pound is just filthy. Like, you know, he's hurting people. And if you've ever seen him live, which I know you have, Kel, but that dude, like, when that ground and pound hits, everything shakes. Like, you can feel it in press row. So it'll be interesting. I'd like to see him fight Rothwell, to be honest with you. You know, I want to see him fight a top five guy. I think he's ready for that step. He's that good. But, yeah, the rest of the division, you know, there's nobody there.
No one. It's, you know, Frank Mir is still rated like 8 or 9. So it's a weird division. Coming up this weekend, we have UFC in Tampa. Are you excited about this card anymore? The injuries just ruin it. We've had 3 changes, 4 changes to the top two, the main or the co-main in this. Where do you even stand on this fight? It's so weird to me.
Well, you know, when Ferguson got hurt and Khabib ended up facing Daryl Horcher.
Yeah, the new guy.
You know, it kind of took the wind out of the sails, but I was sad, but I was like, all right. Then Lyoto Machida, which it just feels weird. It felt like he got his hand caught in the cookie jar and was like, hey, guys, I did some shit I'm not supposed to do. So then he gets pulled from the card. But I was never excited for Machida Henderson anyway. The fight I am excited to see on this card is Rose and Tisha Torres. Rose Namajunas and Tisha Torres is the fight I really wanted to see. So I'm still interested in this card. Want to see how Khabib looks after the long layoff, damn near 2 years. And, you know, I want to see Cub Swanson fight again. It's just I'm not as excited as it was when it had Khabib and Tony Ferguson on it because that was the fight I really wanted to see. But
and the headliner is now Evans.
Yeah, Teixeira.
I mean, we'll see what Evans has left.
That's all I'm curious about because the Bader fight, Rashad looked bad, really bad. So, you know, fighting a guy, Glover Teixeira, who, you know, only other than John Jones, like, you know, who's really giving Glover Teixeira trouble? So Rashad's going to have – it's do or die for Rashad Evans in this fight. I'm here to see it. I'm interested. But, you know, other than that, it's like, all right, you know, I mean, and Glover also lost to Phil Davis, who's now in Bellator. But it's an intriguing fight, but it was an intriguing co-main event. I'm here to see Rose Namajunas and Tisha Torres because the strawweight division, women's strawweight division in the UFC is very competitive.
Definitely. And Rose is working her way up to that title shot.
Yes, and she's that good. That girl is, she's an intriguing personality, and she's got skills. We saw what she did to Paige VanZant, and you know she lost to Tisha Torres in Invicta years ago. So when she was, I think she just turned 21 in that fight. So there's, like I said, a ton of intrigue. I'm looking for it. I'm excited for it. That fight. Everything else. I mean, Michael Chiesa and Benil Darush is good. Betch Korea returned after getting mauled by Ronda. She's fighting Rocky Pennington. Court Beguise on the card. It's not a bad card. It's just, you know, being kind of decimated by injuries and Lyoto Machida, you know, don't do drugs and do drugs campaign.
How do they fix these injuries, man? We've seen just these entire April cards just be ravaged by injuries. And they're in danger of having everything we saw at that press conference that we're so hyped about just fall by the wayside now. Because it looks like every fight is just getting hit with, like, they tip the dominoes and they're all just falling.
I mean, this is UFC. Because of the disciplines in UFC that you got to practice, it doesn't take much for somebody to fall on your leg or, you know, an injury to happen. So they're building the new performance center, the center out here in Vegas, which is supposed to help. They're supposed to get these trainers to show people how to train properly without getting hurt. But it's MMA, man. You can't really stop injuries. You know, these guys don't really take their foot off the gas in training. Anything can happen. You know, bodies are flying around those MMA gyms all the time. If you go to a gym, you're looking at guys, you're like, well, shit, somebody's going to get hurt. and that's pretty much what happened. You know, Cormier gets hurt. Ferguson, freak injury. You know, thought he had a punctured lung or whatever it was. Things happen. You can't get away from it. So as soon as I saw the UFC Unstoppable, the first thing I said was, let's see how many of these things stand up in the next few months. It's hard to keep a card intact. Even UFC 200 is destined for somebody to get hurt.
Do we need less cards then? This has always been the case. Do you need less cards to stack the talent just in case?
I've always said that. I've always felt like there are too many UFC cards in the sense that you got talent, but you know, when an injury happens, you feel like you would like to get a fighter in there. And you can't really do that when you have a card, you know, three cards a month. And I get, you know, they want to make this a universal sport when, you know, it has no season finale. It's going to be continuously year-round. But, man, it's just so many fights, dude. It's hard for many of us to keep up. And then you have the Fight Pass, and then you have Fox Sports 1.
Yeah, one FS1 a month, one pay-per-view. We're good.
Yeah.
Every now and then you throw it on Fox.
Yeah, and then you just kind of say, all right, well, you know, you have an injury to a major card. You look at the FS1 card and you go, hey, you're going to be off of the FS1 card because it's on free TV anyway, and we're going to pull you to the pay-per-view. And if you do that, you know, you don't have cards that get really decimated by injuries. I mean, it's not nearly as bad when John Jones, you know, pulled out 151 when Henderson got hurt because that card was terrible. There was no way they should have kept that card together. But, you know, injuries are a thing in the UFC, and they're always going to be a thing. They're never going to figure this out. So, you know, guys are going to train as hard as they want to train. They're going to get hurt, and that's that.
And like you said, now it just forces people to stay in the fight because John said, you know, one of the reasons he stayed in and took this Ovin St. Preux fight is because he pulled out of that Henderson fight a long time ago. And it's like he owes it to fans. It's like, yeah, but you don't want to be stupid either.
Yeah, I hate that. I hate the pressure of, you know, accepting a short notice fight. It disgusts me because if I'm Conor McGregor, for instance, and the Nate Diaz fight, like, you didn't have to take that fight. And I respect him for doing it. But if Conor McGregor didn't take the fight, right, we would have been pissed for like a week and we would have got over it.
We would have been pissed at RDA.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, yeah, and we would have got over it and we would have moved on. And then Conor could have properly trained for Nate Diaz or whoever he was going to, or Rafael Dos Anjos fight. He could have properly trained for it, maybe won, and we wouldn't have to worry about him losing. It's just short notice fights are a thing that the fans and social media have pressured fighters into doing. And the UFC is guilty of this too.
Yeah,
the UFC, they blame John Jones. Yeah, they blame John Jones for that card falling apart. It wasn't John Jones' fault. It was Dan Henderson getting hurt and then you not having a strong enough card to keep everybody interested. That's not John Jones' fault. And as much as I talk about John Jones being a douchebag, even though it's Chael Sonnen, somebody you could have ran over, you should never make somebody feel guilty for fighting somebody on like 4 days' notice. Like, it's stupid. It's ridiculous. We talk about like 10 days with Conor and Nate, but let's be real. That was like 3 days' notice because after that, it was fight week. You're not really doing that much preparation during fight week. You're doing media obligations and everything else. So
exactly.
It's just not fair. It's not fair to these guys.
No, it's like, you know, telling an NFL team in the playoffs, like, oh, you know what? Okay, Tom Brady got injured. You're supposed to play the Patriots. We're just going to remove them and take a random team that didn't make the playoffs and put them in 2 days before the game. Have at it. Like, it just doesn't work. The other team may be great. You still might not win that fight because you didn't prepare for that team or you didn't prepare for that person. It's just a horrible setup. We don't see it in other sports. We don't see it in boxing, which is a combat sport. You just don't take people out and put people in.
Nah, it's crazy. It's crazy. I mean, it's hopefully, you know, some of these guys are wising up, but it is what it is. You know, like guys like Conor, they're going to want to fight. Fine, go ahead, fight. But you're putting a lot on the line by doing it. People respect you, but at the end of the day, only people that you remember is whether you win or lost. That's it.
Exactly. All right, let's take a quick break then because we're coming back. We probably got like 20, 25 minutes left in the show. We got to talk wrestling.
Yes, sir.
WWE had some stuff go down, a key injury, and New Japan had one hell of a card we got to talk about. So everybody stay tuned. We'll be right back. All right, everybody, what's up? Thanks for staying through the break. We promised you wrestling. We're going to give you wrestling. We had Raw on Monday, and second week, we see Shane O'Mac on Raw. We don't see Vince. We don't see the Authority. Just Shane O'Mac running stuff. He says this is his last week. We'll see. What do you think about Raw?
I thought Raw was actually really good. In the sense that it ran a lot smoother than the week before, with all the new talent. We had some great matches, AJ Styles and Sami Zayn. It just in terms of it coming after WrestleMania, it just again it made WrestleMania feel so inconsequential. Cause like, dude, Shane, you lost. It was funny watching Shane tell Kevin Owens he lost at WrestleMania, and that's why he can't get an immediate IC title shot. But here you are running Raw, and you lost to The Undertaker. Really, like, confusing from that base. But as a standalone show, I thought it was good, man. I mean, we got the debut of Gallows and Anderson. Cesaro and Kevin Owens had a great match. There was the Dudleys and Lucha Dragons I didn't care about. The graphic for the Bootios tournament –
amazing. They put some real work into that.
Yeah. Everything about that is great. Natalya and Charlotte had a great match, which I thought had a great finish with Ric Flair saving the day and Charlotte looking like, oh, I didn't lose my title when she tapped. It sets up a program for Payback. It feels like they're keeping Sasha away from the title until SummerSlam.
Which is crazy again. Like, why do you just – she was so hot. You built all this just momentum for her. She had the Snoop entrance. Everyone thought it was her time. She doesn't win, and then you just take her off of television.
Well, I mean, they're overloaded with talent. I'm not mad at this decision at all. I think it's best right now to keep Charlotte holding on to that title, and they're redefining her heel role with Ric Flair. The Dr. Phil thing, I thought was really I didn't know what they were doing with Dr. Phil, but I thought it was great how Phil kind of played off of, like, you're living off your dad, and he's, saving your ass.
He planted the seeds.
Yeah, but I don't think – I think this doubles down their relationship. And if Charlotte – she'll go over on Natty at Payback, first of all, Payback in Chicago, that card is loaded. That card looks better than WrestleMania.
Pure wrestling-wise, yeah.
Oh, definitely. My God, it looks great. But going back to Charlotte, keep her strong. Sasha will be involved in a feud with somebody and beat her up. But have Sasha have her moment at SummerSlam. They'll rebuild her momentum. Sasha's momentum is not dying anytime soon. They're probably waiting for Becky to get healthy. Sasha and Becky may have a match or something like that. But and then just keep building that Charlotte is this monster, this heel that everybody hates and wants to see lose the title. Because right now, Charlotte hasn't necessarily become that woman that you're like, oh, I'm sick of her with the title. By August, people will be sick of Charlotte. But, I mean, overall, I thought it was a great show, man. I thought it was a great show. But what did you think?
I thought it was great. I thought the match between Zayn and Styles was really good. Yeah. I expected a run-in, but it seems like they're moving away from that, which is also a positive thing. I'm not mad at that at all. Like, okay, you don't want to have run-ins? Cool. The straight-up losses don't bother me. Once again, it's ongoing. There's no off-season. People can take an L and come back. Right. So it was a great match between the two. Sami Zayn, we'll see where he goes from here. Obviously, it looks like him versus Owens for Payback, but we don't know yet. It's kind of still building. They're building the anticipation towards that fight still.
They're fighting that Payback. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It was interesting to see Kevin Owens get escorted out of the building, and then I was like, oh, he's going to run in. And he didn't.
Yeah, no comeback. I was like, okay, I'm sure he'll address that next Monday.
Oh, yeah. But those two, they're headed on a collision course. And in Chicago, where that feud will be ultra hot.
With no belt, though. Like, I think it was you that said they don't need a belt for this feud.
And they really don't.
I was like, how do you set up a ladder match in a future without a belt? Two, I just didn't understand, like, the concept around it. Like, to me, Owens was a champion. He's such a great champion. Why not have him have the belt? But like you said, it's working without the belt. Kevin Owens doesn't need it. He can talk himself into the situation. It doesn't even matter between these two. And they can build one hell of a story. And they haven't even gotten into the backstory yet.
That's what I'm saying.
The 13, 14 years of plot. Like, they're building a good story without any of that.
Yeah, there's so much history behind those two. And I mean, from PWG to ROH, like, these guys just fought everywhere and had one of the best feuds in wrestling, period. you know, when El Generico versus Kevin Steen, for, you know, those who'd never watched indie wrestling, go back and watch these matches and watch how, because they were a tag team, they were best friends. Owens turned on Generico. The thing went, I mean, they went insane with it. So at this point, they, you know, if you start putting those stories in, you don't need a title. This is just a few that needs to happen. Cesaro versus Miz, Cesaro needs a title. I felt like they did a workaround to figure out how to get Cesaro a title. He's a guy who kind of needs a belt. And with that being said, Miz and Maryse together, their little segment backstage was dope. Maryse, you know, don't drink domestic water. Like, she's adding another element to Miz's character, which is important. But yeah, overall, I mean, we'll talk about the main event. I mean, the funniest thing about Raw is that Roman Reigns is the champ, and even though he gets booed out of the building, he's not a big part of the show.
No, he was the sidekick.
Yeah, and Bray Wyatt, as a face, stole the show. And that excellent finish where Wyatt hit the Sister Abigail and then the no-look point to Sheamus to, like, get him, bitch, and, like, and sicked Roman Reigns on Sheamus with the spear. That was everything about that was phenomenal.
And but then now we hear that Bray Wyatt was injured during a live show in Milan. So leg injury for Bray Wyatt. No details on how long he'll be out. But he had to be helped out of the ring. The match was canceled. So whenever they all-out stop a match, that's not good. We'll see. They say calf, so it's not knee. I guess you can tear still a ligament around your calf, or you could tear the muscle, or it could just be a cramp. So, you know, there's so many things that can happen down there. We'll see what happens to Bray Wyatt, because they were in a pretty good feud, and Bray was getting a really good push.
Yeah, I mean, Bray, turning him over as a face was the best thing that WWE has done in a long time, because as a heel, you know, he was losing a lot. He was putting guys over, and the fans just like him. You don't have to do a character change. He's the same guy with the same motives, and you just have him beat up a bunch of heels that he doesn't like. And that's the best way to do it. And that's the way that you build the character. That's how you kind of built the mystique of The Undertaker. Because Undertaker was so good as a heel, but when you turned him face, you kept the character exactly the same. He was over with fans. So you do the same with Bray Wyatt and the Wyatt family. Eventually, Luke Harper comes back. Maybe eventually Luke Harper takes the Wyatt family away from Bray Wyatt. I don't know. But there's a ton of scenarios here where Bray Wyatt works as a face and you can get him super over with the crowd. Hopefully this injury isn't something that's longstanding.
And even if it's a couple months, Bray is the type of character where he doesn't have to wrestle to keep his mystique. He can sit in his rocking chair. He can send the Wyatt family out for 2 months to do his bidding. And then when he's healthy, he can come back.
Yeah,
you know,
very
he can
true.
Just cut promos and keep all the momentum that you built for him. He can keep that going through a small injury. Now, if you need surgery or something, obviously more difficult. But I can see him just cutting promos for 2 months and letting, you know, the other two Wyatt family members do his bidding and coming back with Money in the Bank. Like, what if Bray wins Money in the Bank on a return? Like, a face Bray Wyatt with the Money in the Bank just terrorizing people, don't know when the hell he's going to cash in. Imagine the lights just going out on Roman Reigns every other week, and he's just scared as hell, and Bray doesn't cash in.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
he never knows when it's gonna come. Like, so many different angles with Bray as a face, and they could have done it as a heel, but they didn't, you know, feel they had that platform to do so. So
no, it's a different level for Bray Wyatt. Roman Reigns, on the other hand, is I'm really interested in how this is gonna play out with AJ Styles. I don't see him losing the belt to AJ Styles. I just don't see what the WWE's booking is thinking, because this match is going to be in Chicago and it's going to be brutal for Roman Reigns.
I think they're trying to have him win over the Chicago crowd like he did the Philly crowd temporarily, but then he went back there and got booed again.
It's never going to happen. He's not going to do. You're not going to win over a Chicago crowd who loves indie wrestlers and put AJ Styles against Roman Reigns in just a one-on-one match with like no third person, no nothing.
Chicago fans are just having like flashbacks of CM Punk versus Ryback.
I mean, CM Punk versus Cena, Money in the Bank. That was one of the best matches ever that WWE's put on. And Cena, I mean, he got booed out of the building. I don't know if Roman's not built for this. I mean, and the reason why I say Roman's not built for this is because I'm getting sick of the I'm not a bad guy, I'm not a good guy, I'm the guy. It's like they're trying to force that down your throat. So it's going to be, I don't know, man. He's on Raw, but he's like a footnote to Raw. He's not even the highlight of Raw anymore. Everybody else is.
And we still don't even know what's happening with the U.S. Championship. We didn't touch on it, but Kalisto looked like he may have been injured. It could be a work.
I think it's a work. I think they just protected him to make sure that they lost that in the title tournament, but it wasn't his fault because he is the U.S. champion.
Yeah, he has to come off of that belt sooner or later, too, because he's not even defending it on television.
No, I mean, I'm sure he will. I'm sure he'll get into it with somebody else. God knows who. But I think with, like, Kalisto, he's got a lot of talent that he showed in the indie scene, and we really need to see him break out. Like, he really needs to break out of Lucha Dragons. You know, he just needs to be Kalisto and really put it together as a wrestler. And right now, it's just not getting over.
Yeah, so that was Raw, pretty much, wrapped up in a nice little tight
package.
Except
for, you forgot the biggest part.
Oh, yes, how could I? Bullet Club debut.
I'm not really necessarily going to call it the Bullet Club.
Well, listen, they're going to be the Bullet Club forever. I don't care. They change the name. They do whatever the hell they want. They still do all the Bullet Club mannerisms. They did double guns. You know, everything was there for the Bullet Club. I thought they looked great. It was a shock. I don't think anyone expected it.
No, not during the Usos match. And poor Usos. If anybody needs a reboot, those two guys need a reboot. But yeah, when Gallows and Anderson, and if you notice, they referred to Gallows as Luke Gallows, not Doc Gallows. Luke Gallows that used to be with Straight Edge Society.
Yes.
But Carl Anderson looks great. Dude's lost a ton of weight. Well, not even a ton of weight. He's just tightened
ripped.
Up.
Yeah, he's
tightened up. But my problem is where if the WWE feels like they can get over with them just being a tag team. They don't necessarily have a unique look to them, but they can wrestle. But they're not like – even in New Japan, they were like – they wrestled kind of a WWE style. Anderson really is the guy who makes that engine work, but
– And Machine Gun is the mouthpiece.
Yeah, Carl Anderson, he does both. Gallows is the big brute. It's just going to be interesting because if they don't get over with the crowd in a few weeks and here's why I say this. It's because there's so many names have been called up in the past 2 weeks. They've got to – some guys just aren't going to get over. And I think Apollo Crews is going to become a victim of this. The Vaudevillians obviously are going to be a victim of this. Enzo and Cass are going to be over. They've got it. I don't know where Anderson and Gallows fall into this. And hopefully they do this right because I don't see a Bullet Club reunion of any sorts coming in the near future given how Anderson and Gallows came in. I think they're going to use them as a tag team to reboot this tag team division and give them a run. But if they don't become champions, they just become the Ascension, then there's no Bullet Club or whatever.
Well, I think you always have the ace in your pocket where you can always put them into the Bullet Club and everyone knows. So if they're going to join the Balor Club, you can start them off by themselves. And whenever they start losing steam, you just throw them with Finn and they're fine.
I just feel like we're a long way from connecting those dots.
Yeah,
Finn's still in
NXT. Like, if everything goes well, it's a long way away. If stuff starts to hit the fan and, you know, they start turning into Ascension, then you speed up that process. Then, but, you know, you press fast forward and you say, okay, they're Finn's guys.
But on top of that, like, Finn doesn't – I mean, right now, as everything stands right now, Finn doesn't need anybody. The only – like, he's teasing this and people are, like, interested, but Finn's a star by himself. The only reason Finn would ever need them is if he turned heel. And he had – it seems like we're far from that right now. So, you know, I don't like fantasy booking too far out because I have really no idea what they're doing with all this
Maybe
talent
they
that they brought
Styles,
up.
Maybe they go with Styles then. I mean, if you don't put him with Finn, you put him with Styles.
Yeah, I don't – see, and Styles doesn't need him right now.
No.
It's just as of right now, the WWE has their hands full, you know, booking this talent because now you got – again, you got Cruz, you got the Vaudevillians, you got the Enzo and Cass, you got Gallows and Anderson, and then you got Cesaro returning. And then it's like you're eventually going to have Neville – and Rollins. It's like you're going to have to book all these guys. So some guys just
Orton
aren't going to make
it. Orton is, 2 weeks away from returning.
Exactly. Some of these guys just aren't going to make it. And I don't know who they're going to be. And Anderson and Gallows, they don't have that. If it wasn't for the Bullet Club, they'd just be a regular tag team. If it wasn't for their history. So you never know with Vince, too. Like, Vince putting over factions from other companies is not really his thing. So we'll see how, you know, if the demand is there, maybe they do it. But I'm curious because they introduced them the week after the Raw after WrestleMania, and there's really no ties to anybody else right now. So we'll see. I mean,
to
hopefully.
I think Vince, when he signed off on it, you signed them because you have Finn and because of the Balor Club. I think Triple H says, these are his guys. This is why you bring them in. I think that was his conversation with Vince. Vince isn't stupid. If they were just an indie group that he signed, they'd be in NXT. But the reason they're not in NXT is because Triple H went and said, these guys are special. They were with him. Them together is special. Let's go. I'm tired of being on TV every week. We don't have to be the heels to carry this shit. Man, Somebody's going to be the heel group and faction, like DX was, like, you know, the countless factions that can carry the heat, and you don't need Mr. McMahon on TV every day.
No, that's true. I also thought it was kind of weird to see them debut on Raw like that, in a strange way, because the dots are so far apart to connect these guys. Because I don't think they'll ever join with Styles, and Finn's still in NXT, and I thought
Not in NXT though. Finn is nowhere, to be honest. He did no tapings for the next 5 weeks. He'll probably cut a few promos. We'll have Samoa Joe versus maybe Austin Aries for a number one contenders match, or Nakamura, whoever it may be. But they're gonna carry the storyline in NXT for the next 5 weeks. Joe trying to build himself up for a third title match, and someone else trying to stop him.
Well, you know, the other thing is, if you go back to other TakeOver shows, which I actually was doing, the NXT shows after TakeOver are pretty stupid and bad. They're just like pre-recorded stuff that they just stick in there. So not seeing Finn is actually not that big of a shocker to me. So there's a possibility that Balor, he defends the title at the next, you know, TakeOver, and we don't see him. I don't know when we see him, to be honest, on the main roster. Because if you didn't do it now, and right now, you know, all this talent is coming in that you got to figure out what to do with, you don't want to add another name to the mix just to confuse things even more. So maybe they wait until SummerSlam. Maybe they wait until later in the year. I have no idea. Maybe he magically appears in Money in the Bank. Who the hell knows? But Balor, it's just, there's so many people now. And you're still signing people on top of that. So it's a lot to work with. I just, hopefully Anderson and Gallows don't get buried in the process.
Talking about a place where the Bullet Club ruled supreme for the past couple of years, and Anderson and Gallo just dropped their titles before joining WWE, New Japan. Yes. They're on the rebuild. You know, Bullet Club is no more. We have the Elite with the remaining members of the Bullet Club. We saw, you know, Finn jump and then Nakamura jump. So it's a lot of talent they're losing. AJ Styles jumped, and they're on the rebuild. What's next for them? And we kind of got that in this pay-per-view. It was a New Japan Invasion attack. And this is the first time we got a taste of life after those stars.
Yeah. And it wasn't, you know what? It wasn't a bad show. Life after, like, Nakamura and those guys, like, right off the bat, Will Ospreay Jr. is a star.
Yes.
Kid is 22 years old and put on, I would say, a 4.5-star match with Kushida for the junior heavyweight title.
And his match against Ricochet was better than that, by the way. But it was still my favorite match of the night.
Which, actually, in the background, I'm actually watching these shows, the Evolve shows now. But, dude, Ospreay is that guy. Like, watching him wrestle, phenomenal. In Kushida. But the card as a whole, and I just kind of want to jump to it, with Naito winning the IWGP heavyweight title from Okada, it's like this refreshing... Everything's being refreshed in New Japan.
I feel like they usually let the champion hold the strap for longer, though.
Yeah, but Naito was like, it was next. Like, Naito's a guy who, ever since he's turned heel, has been incredibly charismatic and has been primed for stardom. You know, they could do a switchback. Like, he can win the title now and give it back. Or Naito can win the title. I think I said this, like, 4 months ago on this show. Naito can win the title and Okada has to go through G1 to get it back. There's a number of ways that you can do this. You know, you guys like Shibata. It was just loaded. But to see Naito win that title in the manner that he did, it was – and then just kind of like he treated the title like crap. He left it in the ring, kind of just slung it over his shoulder.
Oh, yeah.
And the match was good. Him and Okada had a great match. It's just, you know, the card as a whole was pretty good. Pretty good. But I guess we'll go back – one of the things that struck me is Ricochet and Matt Sydal losing their IWGP Junior Heavyweight titles to Roppongi Vice, which makes me even more curious about what Ricochet is doing. Even though he's taped a few episodes of Lucha Underground as Prince Puma, it seems like with him not taking any bookings through June, we're going to see Ricochet somewhere sooner than later, and I'm trying to figure out what that is.
There's only one place for him to go. And that's the WWE. Like, they've seen him in these Evolve shows. He headlined the Evolve show. You know their relationship with Evolve. We saw Blanchard, his girlfriend, or fiance, whatever she may be at this point. She was just in NXT this week, and we saw her, she taped that match during WrestleMania. That's not a coincidence.
Yeah, it kind of is. I mean, she's on like Shimmer and everything else. I mean, there was a Chikara tag team that was on NXT. They were just talented, just happened to be in town.
But they're just bringing in a lot of people that revolve around this guy. Apollo yeah. Crews, there's a lot of close relationships to the point where he's kind of like, all my friends are kind of there. Let's go. And, yeah. you know, he was in that weird contract. So it's just finding a way to get him out of that contract. Can you break it? Can you buy him out? Will Lucha even listen? He's canceling his indie appearances. He says that he's going to be in New Japan again for the summer in the tournament. But who knows?
Yeah, he'll be in the Super Junior tournament again. He's won it before. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, it's just interesting because they lost the titles. After just winning them, they lost them to Roppongi Vice, which
is horrible. I can't stand Roppongi Vice. And that song gets stuck in my head all the damn time.
But as a whole, I just think it's intriguing to see where Ricochet goes. He's the guy everybody's watching. Once again, my biggest problem with Ricochet, which has always been my problem with Cruz, is cutting a promo. And that's what they're going to have to work on with him, because it's just not going to be talent that's going to get him over. Because he is. He's got tons of it. You know, but who knows? Who knows what happens? I was just shocked to see them lose the tag team titles.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, a lot of belts change hands. I'm watching it yesterday, and I'm just like, for a pay-per-view that I didn't consider to be a major pay-per-view, it's kind of like the first, it's the equivalent of Payback.
It's
just like, okay, we're restarting the storylines, and everyone knew they had to rebuild, and a lot of belts changed hands. So it leaves a lot open for the summer, and guys that I thought, like Sydal and Ricochet, who could be long-term champions, no. We saw the Elite, Kenny Omega, and obviously the Jacksons. We saw them lose their titles, which I don't understand the never open six-man tag team championship stuff, whatever. But they lost. So a lot of the favorites lost in this. It was just weird to me. Shibata, I thought, was a great win. I thought he'd, you know, be getting more of a push, but he has the open weight championship. So cool. We saw another tag team there. It looks like they're trying to build up, Tama Tonga, who a lot of people suggested for a solo run.
Yeah, not ready.
Yeah. I think, you know, maybe he has the look, but I don't think he's ready either, but it's cool that he's in the tag team and they win the titles. We talked about this. After Wrestle Kingdom, they need a new kind of heavyweight tag team to carry it now that Gallows and Anderson left. So maybe, you know, Tonga and Roa are that new tag team. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, again, there was a lot of rebooting. You know, there was a lot of feuds being set up. You know, clearly, you know, with Kenny Omega, with the Elite dropping the six-man never tag team titles, they're going in a different direction. You know, Kenny Omega's going to have to defend his title soon. And I feel like, just like how they have to work around things to get to people to where they need to be, I feel like they're working around Kenny Omega to get him into the title picture. Because the Elite, they kind of need that major title. You know, the Bucks will always be in the junior heavyweight tag team title picture. G1 is not too far away, so there's some things we're going to see. There's going to be some interesting things to pay attention to over the next few months. But again, the card as a whole was good. I had fun watching it. You know, just seeing what they did with Naito, seeing Will Ospreay, because clearly I think he's going to win the junior heavyweight tournament. He's too good not to.
Definitely.
You know, the Tama Tonga, it just, that tag match kind of sucked. I was a big fan of the G.O.D. with, you know, just kind of watching Hanma and you know, doing his headbutts and everything else. But, you know, the Gorillas of Destiny, whatever. We'll see what happens. But it was a good show. It just feels like New Japan's doing a good thing with the reboot. Their ROH relationship cannot hurt at this point. You know, you see guys like Michael Elgin completely reboot their career in New Japan. So it'll be interesting to see how everything plays out. And, you know, once the WWE is done running through New Japan and ROH and just pulling talent out, you know, these guys can settle down and really focus on the storylines. Because New Japan, they just got, man, they got torn apart by the WWE.
Yeah, so I mean, I think, Ospreay is a kid that looks really good, but how long before WWE picks him off? So, you know, maybe like 2 or 3 years. Once again, he's young. They don't go after people that young. But 2 or 3 years, now you have your eyes set on that. Like, damn, he's the next guy. You'd love to set Kenny Omega up for something, but how long until WWE takes Kenny Omega? Right. Just as the character. The Young Bucks have been flirting with that notion and just kind of using it as a contract ploy to hype up the marks. But what if they jump?
They ain't jumping. I don't think the WWE is ever going to get the Young Bucks.
So you just never know. And, you know, Matt Sydal can go back. Who knows? Like, there's always possibilities now that the WWE is just going to snatch in and pick whoever they want. And they've shown that. And that's scary when they can just snatch in anytime and just be like, I want this guy. Come here. And the guy's gone. So it's so hard to build around this talent. I don't know if it forces them to go more at just the Japanese wrestlers and just pushing them, because it feels like there's a less likelihood that they jump. But we saw that with Nakamura. So what's to say that, you know, Shibata won't go? Or someone like that. You know, we talked about Ishii.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of talent, man. I mean, it's a lot of talent, but I think New Japan is safe for now. I think the WWE has their hands full with a ton of guys, and they're trying to figure out what to do with them, you know, where they go. So it's like,
they have to slow down on picking at this point.
So, you know, it's cool that it's cool, like, to see New Japan. I didn't even mention it in the Okada Naito matches, to see Sanada, who's a free agent, make his debut on the main roster of New Japan. So it's like, once they get this thing figured out and settle back down, and G1 rolls around, and we can see. I think you're going to see several guys from ROH and G1. Maybe we see Ricochet in the G1, which I doubt. I think he'll be in the junior heavyweight. Maybe we see a guy like Moose in G1. You know, there's a number of things you can do, and as long as you have that working relationship with ROH open, they should be okay. And Invasion Attack overall was a pretty good card, and it just showcases they still got talent, man. There's still talent that can be worked into and be made stars. And Okada's still a star. Even though he lost the title, Okada's a big deal. And I really don't see him leaving New Japan.
No, I don't think Okada ever goes. I mean, they have the key pieces. They're not going to fold. They're not TNA, which is going through their own problems right now. Damn near got evicted, by all purposes, out of their building. They're not there. But it's just a weird build. So it's like, who do we make superstars next? And how do we stop the WWE from just pillaging our superstars?
Yeah.
That they honestly worked really hard to build. AJ Styles, the WWE could have had him at the TNA. They worked hard to build him. Yeah. Nakamura was built there. That whole persona and personality was built by them. How do you stop them from stealing people that you build up and build their characters and invest a lot in?
You wait them out. You wait them out like the Yankees. I know it's your squad and everything, but the Yankees were notorious for just pulling talent. It was like, hey, we're going to trade and get this guy and get this guy. Eventually, you can't do it anymore. Eventually, you got to slow down. And the WWE is going to have to slow down, and New Japan just has to weather the storm and wait for WWE to be done pillaging and looting and plundering, and then say, all right, cool. Now you guys are full. You guys full? You had enough to eat? All right, now we can do what we got to do. So that's where New Japan is at.
Nah, so it was a good weekend of wrestling. We're gearing up for big UFC weekend coming soon. We're going to have Payback pay-per-view. So the next couple of weeks for us is still going to be busy. A lot of stuff to talk about. Good show today. You go and get healthy.
Yeah, man. Stay away. I don't even know if you can hear it. Like, I'm struggling through this. Like, I got to miss this Badu Jack workout today. I can't go nowhere. So I'm going to be sitting here watching old wrestling and catching up on some work.
I'm going to go check out the Badu Jack workouts. And then this weekend, like I said, UFC Tampa, make sure you guys watch. That should be a really interesting card, along with boxing. Felix Verdejo from Puerto Rico is fighting. Chill. And who else is fighting? Oh, and we talked about Errol Spence.
Yeah,
fighting. Yeah. So great weekend for combat sports. Make sure you guys check that out. We'll be back again next week from Planet Hollywood at our home, Las Vegas Fight Shop. But for now, Andres is sick, and I don't want to catch anything. So I'm going to get out of here. Till next week, we're out.
Peace.